Our guest today is the president of the 30,000-member Chicago Teachers Union. She has served as president for just over 6 years. Our guest today taught high school chemistry for 22 years. She is a product of Chicago Public Schools, having attended Kosminski Elementary School and Kenwood High School. There we go. I like that. Okay. Our guest today earned early admission to Mount Holyoke College. She later transferred to Dartmouth College, where she was the only African-American woman in the class of 1974. Our guest today comes from a family of educators. Her father, mother, and husband, John, who is always here except for today, he's got an appointment, a doctor appointment or something. We're all CPS teachers. Ladies and gentlemen, Karen Lewis. Karen?
Disappointed if you stand up too long. Thank you so much. And Jesse did come. Tardy. Jesse's tardy. But we believe in restorative justice, so we're not going to send you to detention. Good afternoon. It is always an honor to address the City Club of Chicago. And I join the City Club and the rest of Chicago in mourning the loss of Professor Paul Green. He was a charming, iconic figure who left a deep and lasting imprint on our lives with his unique lens on how we all see politics. Full disclosure, he also deftly moderated the presidential debates within the CTU. And if we could take just a moment, if we could take just a moment for Paul, I would appreciate it. Thank you. So I wrote this speech last night because I didn't know what I was going to be able to tell you today. And I sort of would like to read it the way I wrote it, but I'm not, because I wrote, I do not know the results of the membership's vote on ratification of the tentative agreement that we reach with the Board of Education at the Cinderella hour before our intention to strike. And I was going to look over at Franzik and say, guess we're back at the bargaining table. See you next week, you know. But I don't have to say that, so. But I would like to say that no teacher, paraprofessional, or clinician ever wants to go on strike. But it is the most powerful tool in labor's handbox. And I had a parent send me a very angry email about the inconvenience of a strike and how that would be for her. And she asked me, well, why don't you just strike in the summer? So I felt she was entitled to an answer, so I responded. I said, a strike is a withholding of one's labor. We don't work in the summer, nor do we get paid. So a strike has to be a sacrifice for all, including the officers of the Chicago Teachers Union. A lot of people don't realize that. We don't get paid during the strike. You know, we sacrifice with our membership. But I convinced her that she needed to work in her school to ensure that the conditions for teaching and learning are reasonable. But enough about that. The key question is really, what's next for CPS? We will work with them to shore up their financial issues by promoting legislation that will adequately and equitably fund all of Illinois schools. That's an extremely important thing. We've been talking about that for a long time. And regardless of what certain people say about how much this contract cost or how much they can say, understand this. We got them to open up a coffer that only two people that I know of were talking about 10 years ago. And that was one renegade reporter named Ben Jarafsky. Works for The Reader. It's a free paper, you know, so. He's pretty renegade. And we have been talking about TIFs and opening them up, that piggy bank, for a while. And that piggy bank was opened. Guess what? And if we work towards legislation, Senator Raul and anybody else, are there other electeds? And I saw Chris Welch, didn't I? Yeah, Representative Welch. So we want to make sure that there's adequate and equitable funding. That's not equal funding. It's equitable. And if you need to, go ahead and Google the difference. So, because it's not just us, but there are districts throughout the state that have very high poverty, Chicago, East St. Louis, and countless rural districts that have cut out music, art, physical education, libraries, and sports in order to save money. And it's a shame that in this state of wealth, schools and social services are put on the back burner. We can't get a constitutional amendment on the ballot for a progressive income tax, but we can get one to put funds for roads in a lockbox. So why not a lockbox for social services? Why not a lockbox for education and pension? Why can't we do that? People ask me all the time, well, I thought the lottery was paying for education. I know you all laugh, right? You should see the looks on their faces when I explain that the funds go into the general state funds, and they have to be appropriated. And speaking of funding, don't believe the hype from some unreliable news organizations that this contract will cost $8 billion. Because if it did, we would have a social worker in every school. We'd have counselors who actually counsel. We'd have restorative justice advocates. We'd have librarians and schools that look more like Francis Parker and the Latin school and the lab school. That doesn't even begin to include all the bells and whistles that go along with well-funded and well-resourced schools. Working computers, small class sizes, and all the extra adults who can provide the extra resources, help, and time that the most vulnerable students need. Speaking of vulnerable students, at the beginning of the school year, there were almost 600 vacancies in special education. Skinny, you can appreciate this. Where did Skinny go? Oh, there he is. You can appreciate this. Goldman Sachs has developed something called a social impact bond. These bonds were designed to incentivize keeping kids out of special education. The CPS deal, as I understand it, will provide Goldman Sachs with a 6.3% rate of return. That's a lot. I bet none of us in here, well, maybe some of us in here. I forget, there are people here that are, you know. So from a $17 million investment, they are expected to make about $34.5 million. What is CPS doing? They are making it difficult to refer students to evaluation for special ed. I had a paper, and I don't know what I did with it because we're in the process of moving, but it was 20 pages that you had to fill out on a computer, and if you didn't fill it out right, it wouldn't let you go to the next page, so you had to back up and go look at it again just to get an instructional or a teacher's aid for a kid with developmental disabilities. So they're making it almost impossible to refer students to evaluation for special ed or to receive an aid if the IEP requires it by loading the teachers with paperwork. What could that $34.5 million do in the special ed classrooms across the city? We could have almost 700 teacher aides, back to a librarian in every school. We only have 160 system-wide now. We have a full-time social worker for every school. We only have 280 currently. And two restorative justice coordinators in every high school, a special education case manager in every elementary school, and the list goes on and on and on. But Goldman Sachs needs its $34.5 million, way more than the school children in CPS. So what makes this so disgusting is this isn't even a risky endeavor. Research is very clear that high-quality pre-K tends to mitigate the need for special ed later. So that those, it usually means that those kids that are identified as having special ed issues in pre-K usually catch up if they get really good, high-quality pre-K with their peers by the time they're in third grade. So why can't CPS just invest in high-quality child-parent centers? The savings is already embedded, but these social impact bonds simply monetize something we already know works and provides a steady stream of revenue for folks who need it the least. So why aren't we marching in the streets? For a variety of reasons. And I mentioned that 10 years ago, there were only a handful of people talking about TIFs. We were able to get the mayor to open those coffers and find a way to resource our schools with those dollars. The mayor has made a commitment to work with us on finding funding for sustainable community schools. That doesn't mean a project that you do and then walk away from. Okay? These are schools that will have engaging and culturally relevant curricula with an emphasis on restorative justice rather than punishment. We ensure that our members are compensated for their experience and their commitment to the profession. And after 22 months of being strung along and leadership changes, we finally completed the task at hand. I cannot tell you how hard it is to have a conversation with somebody who agrees with you on something, and then they're gone in 2 weeks. CPS, I need you all to stop that. I just need you. Where's Joe? I saw Joe. Joe Moriarty, I need you to stop pushing those people. Where is he? Oh, there he is, sitting next to Franzik, of course. Are you guys joined at the hip? You should be, okay? But we are ready to sound the death knell for the market-driven neoliberal school reform. All the foundations that supported the charter schools have mysteriously vanished. So why do you think that is? Well, charter schools, unfortunately, have been a source of resegregation. Charter schools have produced collateral damage of making some of the districts over 90% hyper-segregated. And this is nationwide. It's not just in Chicago. This is nationwide. There have been a significant number of financial scandals with charter management companies having funneled public monies into their friends and families, companies posing as vendors and real estate brokers, et cetera. So there have been all kinds of little shady deals going on with taxpayer dollars. And yet people want to come at us and say, well, why should I pay for your pensions? I don't have a pension. So you got a matching 401k, baby. You know, a matching 401k. Also, the results are not significantly higher than district schools, giving their ability to be selective. So applications that are long and complicated or convoluted that require a lot of parent compliance automatically select out. They're not doing a better job at a cheaper rate, which is what they promised. Because the last time I saw Andrew Broy, he had his hands out. We need to have the same SBB that district schools have. Why? You all said you could do this job better and more cheaply, and you haven't been able to do it. So what was it, oversold and underperformed? And they have been tainted. And folks like the Walmarts and the Gates people do not like the undue attention they've been getting. So they've kind of been shifting away. But that's what happens in education reform anyway, like every 5 years or so. But, you know, these people had a head start and a lot of dough, so they were able to stick around longer. But we're hoping that that's over with now. And in our contract, we got the ability to put a cap on charter schools. And I have to give CPS credit for this because they said themselves, they know the drivers of the financial deficit, and that one of them is charter schools. They are draining resources from the district schools. And when that happens, the problem is they're public entities when it suits them, when they're getting public dollars, and they're private entities when it's to their advantage to be so. Even CPS didn't balk at the language in our contract that limits growth. The only contract in the country to do so, and have agreed in principle to help change the law that brought the commission into being that can override the veto of any school board that doesn't want charters. And I can honestly tell you, Representative Welch sponsored that bill in the House, and it passed. What I can tell you is that the level of distrust between the district, parents, educators, and communities is still high, and we'll need a lot of work to repair these wounds. Many people are working very hard every day and feel demoralized and put upon. It is highly indicative of why our ratification vote came in 70-30, as opposed to 80-20 or 90-10. But understand this, the Chicago Teachers Union gives voice to the voiceless, gives power to the people, and hope to the determined. We will survive and thrive. Thank you.
Much, Karen.
I hope they're not hard questions.
Well, I don't know. This one's like pre-typed, and I haven't had a chance to read it, so.
Okay.
Wow. It's from a teacher, isn't it? Probably. So this question, let's just get started, is from Karen Carlson. You are here, right? Karen? Okay. Good, because you know the new rule that I made up just by myself. I didn't even talk to Jay about it. If you're not here, I don't ask your question. What do you feel is fair split of funding responsibilities for teachers' compensation? Can you think about that for a minute?
I don't understand the question. I'm sorry. What do you mean a fair split? Are you talking about the pension pickup?
Karen, you can speak. Your question says, what do you feel is a fair split of funding responsibilities for teachers' compensation? Karen asks, are you speaking specifically about the pensions?
Pension pickup. I don't know, because I don't know what that means.
Okay.
Because I think they should be paying us way more than they are. That would be the fair split.
All right, well, I'm going to keep moving on that then.
Okay.
So, Steve Briggs, are you here? No. Okay. It says, and he's from Waddell and Reed, some states have faced similar budget pressures, and labor unions traded newer teachers' welfare to protect enfranchised teachers, ultimately leading to an exodus of talent. What are you doing to avoid similar talent displacement in Illinois?
Because we didn't agree to a two-tier system. A lot of people think we did. Two-tier systems are when somebody is actually getting paid less for doing the same work. And that's what's happened. And I think, you know, people need to prioritize and remember that budgets are moral documents. And if you don't think You don't think having a good public education system is worth funding, then there's something wrong with you. There's something absolutely wrong with you. So, again, and I mean that's on a very personal, deep moral judgment. Sorry, Monsignor. I'm being judgy about that.
So, Mike, I can't read your last name. Asks about Renew Chicago. Are you here? Okay, I'm telling you guys, I'm going to start pitching these questions. Okay. Oh, I see him. Okay. What does restorative justice look like in a Chicago public school?
Oh, good. I'd like to answer that. Give me good questions. All right. So restorative justice looks like this. That when conflicts occur between kids or between kids and adults, you have to find the root of the problem, because what you're looking to is to solve the problem. Not just remove a child, kick them out, or do whatever it is. And so you spend time trying to ask them questions. And in a very Socratic way, you ask them questions. You try to get to the root of the problem so that you can solve it. And in a real restorative justice environment, the student owns up to the responsibility and to the pain they might have caused somebody else. And they figure out a way to not only apologize, but to make amends. So it's a process. It's not something you just say, okay, let's just sit around a circle and say nice things to one another. It's not that, which a lot of people think that's restorative justice. It isn't. And it's a holistic way of looking at children as not having problems, but being part of a solution to whatever their issues are. Can I give you a quick example? I remember I asked this girl who was like continuing putting her head down in my class, and I said, what's the matter? And she cussed me out. Now, I could have just written her up, sent her to the principal, but I knew there was something else going on, because that isn't normal behavior. So if she's cussing me out, I need to know why she's upset. Well, her mother had just died, and she was in school. And I was like, why did you bother to come to school? Take the time off. Restore yourself. You know, but did I write her up? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But there are so many people who would have, because they take offense at being cussed out. Oh, I was 15. I never cursed out a teacher out loud. But in my head. So, you know, I mean, come on. Does that help?
Let me just ask a quick question. How many teachers, retired teachers, kids of teachers do we have in the room, just by a show of hands?
See that table back there? Those are my mother's friends. Imelda, Beulah, Helen, and Ruth. Raise your hand. Those are my mother's best buddies.
Look at them. Wow. Wow.
I have a special name for them. They're the AKA Mafia.
I love it. I love it. Speaking of your mother, mm-hmm. Kathy Consperic. Wow, I butchered that, didn't I? She's a retired CPS teacher, and her mother taught with your mother.
That's right. At Sullivan Elementary. I remember the name.
So
yes.
Why am I telling you all this right now?
I don't know.
So Kathy is asking a question about the impact of the social medical and lack of social medical and counseling services with our children, and, you know, do we feel like City Hall is understanding this, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I think people understand it. I just think they keep saying we don't have any money to pay for it. But you got money to build baseball stadiums for DePaul. No, I didn't mean anything bad about that. But you got a basketball stadium you're building. I mean, again, you have to prioritize. It's just as simple. I think they do know, and I think they do wish they could do better. That's been my impression. I have not met anyone at CPS who is venal. Well, okay. Maybe one. But the people that we have worked with, we've negotiated with, have been very sensitive to those issues. But the problem is they keep throwing up their hands about the budget. So in our contract, we got together and decided to have a joint budget committee so we can work on some of these things. CPS really, as far as I'm concerned, is looking at how to be more inclusive in the process of decision-making with us. And that can only go well, or they'll just blame us for anything that's wrong. So
we have just a couple more questions. Helen Ezrenwa? I butchered that one, too. Again, Dr. Green is going, ah. He's laughing at me, everybody. She says you look fabulous.
Thank you.
And you Broncos. That kind of runs in. You guys have that good. How many Broncos are in the room? I happen to know both of them very well. Helen is saying that she wants to, I think you may have already answered the question, what will it take to make the current tentative agreement permanent to avoid a future strike? But I think you're going to talk about that a little bit.
Well, CPS has to ratify it now, and then it becomes a contract. But let me tell you about strike. We are going to be ready for the next one because we may have to do it. I mean, I wish you all would understand that the notion of a strike, which scares everybody, it helps our members because our members feel like they have some power, which, quite frankly, has been taken away from them for years and years and years of beatdowns, you know, and tons and tons and tons of stuff. So the more we work together to ameliorate all that, the better off we'll be. What it will take to stop strikes will be you all making a commitment to resourcing the schools. Then we want to go to work. You don't want to go to work when you get there. You just feel like you're walking through fog because that's how it feels sometimes. People feel so overwhelmed. Again, I wish I had that piece of paperwork with me that I would show you 20 pages. I mean, like, there was a person that came up with this idea a few years ago when we were saying that it was very important for kids to pass all their core courses freshman year of high school. So instead of working with trying to fund tutoring and things of that nature, they just made it almost impossible to fail a kid. You had to fill out like 300 pieces of paper. You know, that is failure avoidance. That is not passing. But this is the kind of stuff that goes on in our schools. And when I tell Joe something else happened, he usually calls that principal in and takes care of it. Thank you.
Okay, one last question. And whether you went to Whitney Young, like Treasurer Summers, or a proud Bronco like you, or any of the schools, we know that there is going to be a disparity between jobs and careers. And Jesse, oh, that's Lester Munson. He gets a pass. So Jesse's asking, given the changes and the lack of jobs and careers that will be going, that will be happening in the next few years, how do you expect CPS and CTU to work together to educate our students?
Well, I think we have to talk about what transformative education looks like, right? And what it means is that we have to find a way to increase our career and technical ed component. And the way we do that is by getting people in the field to become licensed and come in our schools and teach. So, but you have to make it attractive for them, okay? Pension, compensation, benefits, steps and lanes, things of that nature. Because who we are competing against are not Houston, which you all like to pull up and say we're 4 years behind the Houston kids. You know, we're not competing with Houston. We're competing for a talent for Wilmette. You know, and Waukegan. What's that other one? W? Winnetka, yeah, that's the one. Sorry, you know. But the key is that you have to find the people that want to do the work and that make that feel valued. And that is the ultimate issue within CPS. If your faculty and your workforce, your staff, does not feel valued, you will not get out of them what you could get out of them. And I mean, that's any place. Those of you that work in corporate America get that. You have to have your employees feel valued. And when they feel valued, they will walk on water. They will walk through gasoline. Wait, not gasoline. Alcohol fires. Alcohol fires, by the way, just for those of you that don't know, are the most dangerous because they're invisible. So you can't see the flames, and you will walk right into a flame. But when people feel motivated and loved and cared for, did that freak you out a little bit? Go home and light some alcohol up. Go home, take a little cap of alcohol. You'll see a little blue flame, and then you'll see nothing. They're dangerous. That's why we stopped using alcohol lamps in chemistry classes. Lester, you would remember that. That's why we use Bunsen burners. But seriously, you have to make people feel like they're a part of the solution and that they're valued. Thank you.
Oh, I get to. Don't you love how teachers never stop teaching?